gonna smack down my competition.
I'm ready to take a big bite out of competition.
It's Big Chef, Little Chef Showdown, plus hot dog, pound cake, and my barbecue Sammy. Next, Rachel.
Rachel Ray, today at 1 on NBC5.
We all rise for work, family, passion. NBC5 rises for you, the largest news team connecting you with Texas. NBC5 Today, weekday mornings, starting at 4:30.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, except last week, I'm alongside my host, my co-host, Fred Alveda. But first of all, yeah, I wasn't last week here, but it was a great show. I listened back to it. Of course, thank you, Kieran Clark. I mean, whenever he comes in, it's like nothing's lost. It was a great show. So thank you, Kieran, for filling out for me. And Fred, how are you this week?
Well, I'm great, Carlos. Great to have you back. As you say, Kieran did a tremendous job. He's always a pleasure to have on the show, and he brings so much knowledge and information with him. So we had a great chat, and the show flowed really well. So, but, hey, Carlos, we got another interesting week in golf to talk about. A major was shortened to 54 holes, and we kind of wonder why. More rules issues are coming out of Chicago and Boise last week. And then someone's going to be $10 million richer come this Sunday night as the FedEx Cup wraps up. So we're going to preview that. And there's a lot of golf to talk about tonight, Carlos. So let's get to it. Let's go.
Let's get to it. We have, like you said, we're going to be recapping, as usual, the major action, talking about the FedEx Cup. There was a major in the LPGA, the final major, as a matter of fact. And we're going to have Steve Eubanks, who you interviewed, talking about that as well. And we're going to preview the finals for the Tour Championship there. Who's going to win it? Our lips are sealed. And I just want to say one more thing about Kieran, because I had this question that was me. How do you guys make it seem so smooth that, like, whenever one of you is not, you know, when he comes in, it's like we give the baton to Usain Bolt. That's just a relay. That's what we do. Yes. That's how it happens.
Yeah. So it's just seamless.
It's seamless. Seamless. So anyway, let's go right away to the weekend backspin. And Fred, the PGA Tour is coming down to the end, just the second to last tournament of the year. It's the FedEx Cup. It was the BMW Championship. And out of left field came the winner and got into the mix of the top five. Tell us all about what happened there at the BMW Championship.
Well, he really didn't come out of the blue. You know, he played really well in Boston 2 weeks ago, but just kind of couldn't get it done at the end there. But Mark Leishman dominated all week, making up for his collapse in Boston. He finished off the win on Sunday with an impressive five-shot margin. This was a huge win for the Aussies. He now moves to number four in the FedEx Cup race with a chance to win the $10 million at Eastlake. He would be leading if he hadn't collapsed in that final round at Dell at Boston. Although Mark Leishman has had a solid golf career, he's not a name known to many outside of the serious golf fan. His wife had severe medical issues and nearly died in 2015, and it's given Leishman a kind of a new outlook on the game of golf. He was a PGA Tour Rookie of the Year in 2009. He won the 2012 Travelers. He had a shot of winning the 2013 Masters, and he's finished inside the top six in three of the last four Open Championships, including losing in a playoff in 2015. He won the Arnold Palmer Invitational early this year and is one of the most liked players on tour. At home, Leishman has his own short game area with two putting greens in the backyard plus a putting room above his garage. He spent time on both during the week off. Mowing and maintaining the greens in his backyard is therapy for him. His neighbors think he's crazy because he's out there mowing by hand every day he's home. But back to the tournament, Leishman took the lead early at the BMW and did not give it up. He made amends for his loss at Boston, where he gave away a two-shot lead on the back nine. In the past, he may have backed off at the end when he's challenged, but not last week. He has 15 top 25 results in 24 starts this year. His opening round 62 set the tone for the week. He didn't back down when countryman and former world number one Jason Day was partnered with him on Saturday's final pairing. He didn't back down when American favorite Ricky Fowler joined him on Sunday, or when U.S. Open winner Justin Rose pulled within two shots at the back nine. Instead, he pulled away and won by the five. You know, that's some pretty good stuff. That's the kind of stuff that will get you noticed by golf fans everywhere. We may be seeing a new chapter in Mark Leishman's career. Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose ended a tie for runner-up at 18 under par. Jason Day was fourth, with Matt Kuchar and John Rahm tying for fifth. Jordan Spieth finished down, still got a top 10, T7. You know, I always watch this. You know, the good guys, when they have a bad week, they still finish top 10. Tiger, even when he had a bad week, he still finished top 5 almost always. Jordan Spieth is one of those guys. Even when he's having a bad week, he's still up around inside the top 10. So who's out of the FedEx Cup now? Well, Henrik Stenson, for one. He moved down from 26 to 32nd, so he's gone. Rory's out. Phil's out. Bill Haas moved from on the bubble 30th down to 35th, so he's out. Brendan Steele went from 27 to 33. He's out. Louis Oosthuizen went from 24 to 31. He's out. So if those guys are out, who's in? Well, Jason Duffner ended up the bubble man. He's last man this week at number 30. Tony Finau having a fantastic year, was T7 at the BMW to move up 15 spots from well outside the top 30 at number 39 to number 24. Patrick Cantlay, we've been talking about him a lot the last few months. He made the second biggest move with a top 10 finish, up 12 spots from 41 to 29. Xander Schauffele, who had a really good year also, went from 32nd to 26th. And your guy, your boy, we're going to talk about him a little bit later, but Sergio finished T12, moved up 9 spots, moved from outside the top 30 into number 25. Kind of a funny note, Wesley Bryan played by himself on Sunday. It was an odd man field, and he played the whole 18. Let's see, Sunday 40, he was 42 minutes on the front nine, all pars, posted 69, a quick round. I mean, 42 minutes, how do you do that? He was on the dead run. top five in the FedEx Cup is going to have a chance to win it outright. Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, John Rahm, and Mark Leishman. So those are the guys that we'll be watching this weekend. Carlos, that's all I have on the BMW Championship and the FedEx Cup for the minute.
No, definitely. I mean, we have a lot more to talk about that field that is on the Tour Championship. So I'm going to reserve my comments on that for then. There are some guys that I want you to watch out for, but that I've been talking about also. But hey, great victory by Mark Leishman, like you mentioned, one of the good guys, the most liked guys there on tour. And after what happened to his wife and all this, I mean, his comeback for him is incredible. So it's great to see him back. And hey, with a chance to win outright the FedEx Cup Championship. Hey, let's talk a little bit now. There was action on the LPGA Tour the last major of the season. And Anna Nordqvist, she capped an incredible year with her second major title at the Evian Championship in France. The Swede shot us closing 66 to win in a playoff over world number 102, Brittany Altomeyer. But it was Nordqvist who was the star with her 5 under par 66, which incredibly featured 3 bogeys, 4 birdies, and 2 eagles. I mean, she was all up and down, but she got that 5 under. Nordqvist, she began the day 3 behind the leader then that was Maria Jutanagan, who's world's number 4 Arias sister, but she's becoming more known now. Hey, there's Moria and there's Arya now, so she's not just Arya's sister. And was 2 over after 5 holes, but came back with a birdie on the 6th, an eagle on the 7th, as well as 3 birdies and an eagle on the back 9. Although she bogeyed 18 to finish at 9 under. American Brittany Altomare, she made a long birdie putt on 18 to tie Nordqvist and get into the playoff. She also shot a 5-under par 66 on Sunday. But as Nordqvist and Altomare went back to the 18, the rain turned torrential and sideways, with the green beginning to pick up hailstones. Both ladies had to lay up short of the green after poor tee shots. I mean, who can blame them after that torrential rain? And Altomare made double bogey, meaning a bogey was enough for Nordqvist to secure her second career major and second LPGA Tour title of 2017. You might remember when we talked about Altomare just a couple of weeks ago that she was, I mentioned she was ranked number 566 at the start of last year, and only had her first LPGA Tour top 10 just 2 weeks ago at the Portland Classic, which you might remember as well. Stacey Lewis won and donated all her prize money to the Houston Hurricane Harvey Fund. And I remember mentioning back then that that was a different-looking Altomare. I mean, she looked like she had that confidence as if she was ready to take on the top world players, top players in the world, just after she got her first top 10. Well, it seems like this might not be the last we see about Altomare challenging the top of the leaderboards after this result. Also, former world number one Lydia Ko, she came close. She birdied 14 and then moved into a tie for the lead after chipping in for eagle at the 15th hole, but she couldn't get up and down at the 18th and finished with a bogey, finished level with Utanagar in a tie for third. Ko was looking for her 15th LPGA title, which is her first in more than a year, but ended up tying for third. There's good news. I mean, in being in contention in back-to-back weeks after finishing second at the Indy Women in Tech Championships, it's great to see her after struggling so bad for more than a year. Lydia Ko is looking again like the Lydia Ko that we know, and maybe this is just giving her confidence to come back and try to challenge again for number one. Moria Yutanagarn, she was looking to make history with her sister Arya to become the first sisters in LPGA's history to win major championships. Arya, as you might remember, won the Women's British Open last year, and Yutanagarn had built a 2-shot lead on Sunday before pushing her tee shot at the 13th out of bounds. So she would salvage an impressive bogey after that and become part of a 5-way tie for the lead down the stretch. Her quest ended at the last. She couldn't get up and down at the very difficult finishing hole to get in a playoff that Anna Nordqvist won. With her tie for third, that's 4 finishes of 4th or better for her this summer. The other player tied for third was Australian Catherine Kirk. Se-Yeon Kim, Chung Chung Fong finished in a tie for 6th. American Jennifer Song with another good finish in solo 8th. Mi Hyung Lee finished solo 9th. The top Brit was Georgia Hall, who, as you might remember, was one of those stars from the Ladies European Tour that you are beginning to know now. Also, after the Solheim Cup, she had another great outing for her with a T10 at 4-under after closing with a 1-over par round of 72. She was in contention until then. Other notable finishes, Chrissy Kerr, Danielle Kang, Inge Chun, Morgan Pressel, and Angela Stafford finished T18. Song Young Park, the Rookie of the Year, who was one of the players involved in controversy, as she was one of those who began her first round on Thursday and not well. The LPGA then decided to shorten the tournament to 54 holes, and that wiped out a lot of early scores from players who began their rounds in rainy conditions on Thursday. She was one of them, but then she took full advantage and opened with a blitz in 63 to take the lead early and looked like, hey, she's going to run away with this one as well. But her next 2 rounds resembled that one of Thursday, as she finished with a 73 and 77 to fall all the way to a T26 with, among others, ageless Solheim Cup captain Julie Ingster, Jerina Pillar, Marina Alex, and Mo Martin. Charlie Hall was T32, while Aimee Asato closed the book of her career with two birdies against four bogeys and finished at 1 over 214 in a tie for 32nd, along with fellow Japanese Harikiyo Nomura, who shot three birdies and four bogeys, and Charlie Hall and Min Jae Lee, among others. A nine-time winner on the LPGA Tour, Mia Sato never claimed a major title. Her two wins at Evian came before it was upgraded to a major in 2013. Unfortunately, they cannot be counted back. On the 18th green there, Mia Sato, she held a short par putt, then was greeted greenside by Garrett Player, who presented her with a bouquet of pink roses, and it was a very emotional finish for her. Soyeon Ryu, who finished in a tie for 40th, won the 2017 Rolex Annika Major Award, which recognizes the player who has the most outstanding record in all five major championships during the current LPGA Tour season. Ryu, she received the honor thanks to her win at the ANA Inspiration, her second career major championship victory, and a tie for third at the U.S. Women's Open. She joins now Michelle Wee, Inbay Park, and Lydia Ko as the winners of this award. Lexi Thompson, she finished T48, Brooke Henderson T58, and among the ones who missed the cut was, hey, Moria's sister, Aria, who missed the cut for the fifth time in his last seven starts, and she had a withdrawal in the other one. The LPGA Major Championship season ended the way it started, with a playoff and a fair amount of controversy. I mean, the first major of the year, as you might remember, the ANA Inspiration, went to extra holes because of a shocking four-stroke penalty called on Lexi Thompson during the final round for not replacing her ball properly after marking it on the green the day before. That playoff was won by Soyeon Ryu, despite the wild support for Thompson from fans who thought she had been served an injustice. On Sunday, the fifth and final major, the Evian Championship in France, was decided when Anna Nordqvist bested Brittany Altomaier on the first playoff in an event reduced to 54 holes because of bad weather. That's a decision that annoyed many players and most fans, I'm among them, who felt that majors need to be contested over 72 holes and that shortening a tournament is belittling it. It was the second time in 5 years that the Evian has been a major that it was reduced to three rounds, which led to some players to say it needs to go back to July when it used to be played the week before the Rico Women's Open. The event was moved to September, which is a more volatile time of the year in the foothills of the French Alps, so majors wouldn't be played on consecutive weeks. The major season ended really with no clear dominant player, which pretty much sums up the LPGA season and maybe the LPGA Tour as well. The women's game, like the post-Tiger Woods men's tour, is missing a queen of the hill and instead has an extremely deep pool of talented locked in a revolving door of winners. 15 different players won their first LPGA tournaments, and each major had a different winner. At least this last one had a sort of a redeemed champion as Nordqvist, who last year lost out on the Women's U.S. Open in a controversial ruling. You all remember that. And Fred, she's a great story. With all that she has overcome this year, her never-give-up attitude inspired from her granddad. I mean, this year she has battled glandular fever, which took her out of the Women's British Open before playing a staring role in Team Europe's Solheim Cup efforts, which they eventually came up short. But now she's a major champion once again.
Yeah, it's been a really up-and-down year for her with the illness and coming back and then winning this major. You talked about there's no clear leader right now on the women's tour. Interesting stat I found that you mentioned there were five different women who won the majors this year, and there were five different women who won them last year. So in the last 2 years, in the last 10 majors, we have no repeat winners. Which is kind of unusual in the women's game. Usually somebody gets in a roll and, wins two or three or four. So you're right. The pool is deep. There's a lot of good players. Canceling out that first round was very controversial. We're going to play the interview that we did with Steve Eubanks here in a minute, and he talks about that. And Steve follows the LPG Tour almost exclusively for Global Golf Post and has some good insights into it. Even Sports Illustrated writers Michael Bamberger and Alan Shipnuck decried the washing out of the first round and you know, made mention that it's not a major unless you play 72. And, you know, so why don't you go ahead? Why don't you go ahead and play the interview, and then we'll finish up after that.
Let's play it.
We're happy to be once again talking with Steve Eubank, senior golf writer for Global Golf Post. And, you know, with the Evian wrapping up last weekend, we wanted to get Steve in here to give us his thoughts about the Evian Championship. And, Steve, they kind of raised some red flags and caught some people off guard by kind of washing out that first round on Thursday.
Yeah, but it was really a bad deal. And you know, unfortunately, you're in a part of the country or part of the world that is incredibly rainy this time of year. I mean, this may be the wettest area of Europe in late September. And so it's always going to be a challenge to try to get it in. But if you're going to have a major championship, you have to treat it like a major championship. And that means you stay – I mean, you have to stay till October if necessary to get the thing played. They're traveling the world. You've got an event in New Zealand next week. You've got the Asia Swing coming immediately after that. People are trying to coordinate flights out of Geneva and Paris. And it's tough getting a hotel room up along Lake Geneva that time of year. So all of those factors were considered, and they made the call on Thursday to wipe out the round that had been played up to that point, completely wipe it away, start over afresh on Friday morning, and shorten this thing to 54 holes. None of those decisions would have been bad if we were talking about the ShopRite Classic. But when you're talking about a major championship, those are things that you simply cannot do. You play a major championship the way it's set up, and if you get bad weather, that's luck of the draw. You play as long as you can, you suspend play, you resume play, and you go as long as physically necessary to get in 72 holes of competition. I've seen majors stretch into Tuesday. If they needed to, they could stretch it into Wednesday. You go until the event is over. USGA, last year I was at the U.S. Senior Open. It was in Columbus, Ohio, and it was a soggy mess. Scioto was a wonderful golf course, but boy, it rained. It can rain in Columbus, Ohio, and it went over into Monday and could have easily extended into Tuesday. But they were committed to not just playing 72 holes, but playing the ball down for 72 holes. There was going to be no lift, clean, and place in a USGA championship. So even though the U.S. Amateur was coming the very next week, and which put their television partner, Fox Sports, in a really awkward position because they had to cover both, the USGA said, nope, we believe that championships are 72 holes and they are played down, and we'll stay here till we get it in. And, you know, you have to admire their commitment. None of the players were happy. Nobody that was covering the event was happy. Certainly their television partner wasn't happy. But, look, it's a major. And if it's a major, you treat it as such, and the competition comes first.
Yeah, and I know you and I agree that Michael Wan has not made too many errant calls in his reign as the LPGA Tour commissioner. And now with the LPGA Tour and the European Tour kind of partnering to help out the Ladies European Tour, the LET, Michael has not made too many wrong calls over his tenure as the LPGA Tour commissioner, but maybe this one maybe could have been rethought a little bit, maybe restructured, maybe thought through a little bit better. It's always seemed like the Evian has been kind of an add-on as a major and kind of a stretch. As you say, it's at the wrong time of the year for that part of the world. It doesn't have a major feel. It's a nice tournament, but it just doesn't have a major. And cutting it short by knocking off that first round does not help their case for making it a major.
That's my point entirely. There are obviously arguments to be made for shortening this event to 54 holes, and there were probably a lot of considerations that went into this that I wasn't privy to. And I'm sure there were. But you're right. Mike Wan is, I think he's brilliant. The things that he has done and the moves that he's made, nothing short of genius. He's been incredibly creative and has worked far more miracles than he's made mistakes, I can tell you that. This was a whiff if you want this thing to be a legitimate major. If it's a major in name only, then that's one thing. But if you're trying to craft this thing as a legitimate major and continue a tradition of it being a major into the long term, this was just the wrong call.
You know, that being said, all the controversy surrounding the first round, when we got down to the back nine on Sunday, it turned out to be a pretty good event. Maria Jutanagarn wasn't quite able to carry the day. She brought people back in like Anna Nordqvist and Brittany Altamar and Catherine Kirk was even in there. So it got really exciting, and that eagle that Anna Nordqvist made on 15 really brought a lot of people in and made an exciting event.
It really did make it an exciting event. I mean, look, I still wish 18 was a par 5. It should be a par 5.
Yeah.
Lengthen the hole and make it a risk-reward hole. If somebody needs to try to make an eagle at that last hole, they're standing back there with a 3-wood in their hand with water on the right. I mean, there's a lot that can happen right there, and it would make for an incredibly exciting finish. But other than that, I think you're right. I mean, it was compelling drama down the stretch. You know, you've got Brittany Altamora, who people don't know. I mean,
exactly.
I would dare say that even followers of the LPGA probably don't know much about her. Even
we followed the LPGA as much as anybody, and I was not familiar with her. I had to look her stats up. So.
Yeah, I mean, a Symetra Tour graduate who's had the best season of her career so far, and to contend in a major and to be in a playoff and to have an opportunity to win one. Pretty exciting and compelling stuff. I mean, I hated to see Lydia Ko not be able to get into the playoff. I hated it for Maria Jutanagarn, who is another wonderful person. You hated for that to happen. But, you know, it's hard to argue with the finish. I will say this, though. If it had been a four-person playoff, I think they'd be playing golf today, because when the hailstorm came in yesterday, it was going to be it was questionable that they were going to be able to get it in at all.
Yeah, it was really tough there. It's a good thing it only went one hole, because they had a heck of a time finishing out on 18 just with the two of them. So let's talk a little bit about Georgia Hall. She has really made a splash this year. Looks like a star in the making, and we'll probably see her on the LPGA Tour more next year.
I would say so. Georgia is another one of those players because she's English, because she has primarily played in England, and she's very quiet. A lot of people don't know a lot about her, but she had a breakout at the Solheim Cup, no doubt about it. And, you know, to have had the Ricoh Women's British Open that she had, and then to have the Solheim Cup that she had, really showed, I think, a lot of people that this is an incredibly talented young lady who is going to have a lot of victories in her career. You know, I'm not sure if she earned enough money to go straight into the LPGA, but if she did, you know, she's going to be a great asset. And even if she didn't, if she has to go to Q School, I certainly believe that not only will she make it, but she will contend early and often next year on the LPGA Tour.
Just real quick, what are your thoughts on where Rhea Jutanagarn is at right now? She's just not playing well right now.
She's hitting low hooks. And, you know, look, she has always had a very powerful golf swing, one that, you know, she kind of comes over and compresses the ball, and it's one of the reasons she's always struggled with the driver is that the golf swing is such that she's got a little bit of an upper body lateral move, which puts her in a position that really pinches her irons down and they go forever, but isn't quite so good with the driver. But right now it's just a flippy, hard left miss, and as Ben Hogan always said, a hook is like having a rattlesnake in your pocket. It's eventually going to get you. So, and that's what's happened to her.
I know you are a big Ai Miyazawa fan. She wrapped out her career last week at the Evian. Give me a couple thoughts on Ai Miyazawa.
Not only am I an Ai Miyazawa fan, I don't know anyone who knows her who isn't a fan. This is one of the classiest, most dignified, wonderful young women that you will ever have a chance to be around. the fact that she told us earlier this year that this was going to be her final season, that she was going to wrap it up at Evian where she won her first victory, really allowed this to be almost a celebration tour these final months on that she was out competing. I spoke to her twice at Trump National during the U.S. Women's Open and just told her how much we were going to miss her. But that was everybody. Everybody was saying the same thing, and it was it's just she's such a wonderful human being. It's I think it's she's a tribute and a testament to what women's golf can and should be. I would say to anyone, if you did not follow Ai's career, you're poorer for it, and you should learn what you can about her.
Yeah, she had 9 LPGA Tour wins, 15 wins in Japan, but did not play well in the majors. I think her best finish ever in the majors was a T3, but she's been a great competitor, a great spokesman for the game. And one last thing before I let you go, Steve, looks like Lydia Ko is maybe on the trend to get back to the level of what we're used to seeing from her.
I saw her in Indianapolis before she headed over to Paris, and she's really hitting it well now. The swing changes that she had been working on, really, and when I say changes, they're just going back to what she was doing as a 15-year-old when we all knew she was going to be one of the greatest players in the world. Those are now taking hold. She's striking that driver, which was going to be always going to be a little bit of a problem for her. But man, when she starts rolling it again in Lydia type fashion, which we saw glimpses of this week, then I think she's going to be contending again to be number one in the world again.
Been talking with Steve Eubanks, senior writer for Global Golf Post, expert on everything LPGA Tour. Steve, thanks so much for coming on talking with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Good to be with you.
And there you have it. That was Steve Eubanks and Fred talking about the Evian Championship. And, I mean, of course, the 54-hole shortening and Lydia Ko. And talking about Georgia Hall, yes, she did earn enough money to qualify for the LPGA Tour. She was going to – it's unclear because she was going to play the LPGA Q school, but right now I believe she won't because she already did earn enough money so she wouldn't have to qualify. So that's about Georgia Hall, who's really racing up to be England's star right now in golf and women's golf, even taking out from Charlie Hall, who has like stalled a bit on her potential, but it's Georgia Hall's time right now. So, Fred, any other words you want to add about the Evian Championship?
No, just, we had this conversation last week, is the Evian really a major? And having it there in that location at this time of year when the weather's bad, they've had bad weather there in the past at this tournament at this time, and shortening it, and, it just doesn't have a major feel yet. It doesn't have the history and tradition. They just kind of said, okay, now this is a major. Well, it just doesn't work that way, and so now they're struggling. Maybe over time it'll work itself out and they'll figure it out, but unfortunate that it happened this way, Carlos. Great win for Ananorkis, though.
Definitely. Hey, there was action also. The finals are underway there at the Web.com Tour, and you have the results of what it was, the second of the four final championships there on the Tour Finals.
Yeah, we're halfway through the Web.com Tour Final Series. Chesson Hadley posted scores of 67, 68, 68, but saved his best for last, firing a 65 on Sunday to win the Albertsons Boise Open, lock up his ticket to head back to the PGA Tour again next season. He made a charge late with birdies on three of the final four holes on Sunday. This was Hadley's fourth Web.com Tour win since 2013. Plus, he's a winner on the PGA Tour. He won the 2014 where? Puerto Rico Open on the PGA Tour. What they are all playing for, though, is the 25 golden tickets to play on the 2018 PGA Tour. Jonathan Randolph tied for second. Alex Cheka was solo fourth. And Tyler Duncan tied for fifth. They locked up their tour cards for next season. They're good to go. The top two spots remained unchanged this week on the 25. Peter Uihlein and Ryan Armour are 1 and 2. Uihlein finished tied for 29th this week, and Armour was 51st. Jonathan Randolph's tie moves him into third place. On the list, Tom Lovelady missed the cut but dropped just one spot from third to fourth. As we mentioned, Cheka is good to go. Canadian Adam Svensson was a big mover this week from T40 all the way to seventh, along with Matthew Southgate, who went from 58th to 9th. Perennial Bubble Boy, Rob Oppenheimer, is 8th in the final 25. So Alex Prue is the bubble guy. He's at 25 this week, so he's not safe. He's got some work to do yet the next two tournaments. So, Carlos, they head to the DAP here in Cleveland this week, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit.
And on the European Tour, Romain Wattel began the final round of the KLM Open one shot behind Thailand's Kitadech Afi Bonrad. But the French player, he made three birdies in his first six holes to pass him. The Thai golfer struck back on the back nine when he birdied in his 14th to move ahead once more. But Afi Bonrad found water on the next and made double bogey and then did the same on the 18th hole to fall back into a tie for ninth place. 20-year-old Austin Connolly, he applied some pressure with a final round of 66. He posted a four-round total of 14 under par. Wattel looked to have the title sewn up, though, when he stood on the tee on the par 5 18th on 15 under, but he made life difficult for himself by missing the green on the home hole with his approach. He kept his cool, though, and made an excellent up and down to close with a 69 and win by one from Connolly. A group of six players shared third spot, Eddie Pepperell and Lee Westwood of England, South African George Coetzee, Sebastian Hazel of Germany, and another Frenchman, Joel Salter. This was an unexpected win for Romain Wattel, who had been enduring a poor season on the European Tour. Although the Frenchman has had 25 previous top 10 finishes on the circuit, his best result this year going into this event was a tie for 24th spot. This was his first European Tour victory. For Austin Connolly, who finished 14th in the Open Championship, has been trying to earn enough money to gain his European Tour card, and this second place will go a long way to securing it. Lee Westwood, he enjoyed a solid week and looks to be returning to form as the European Tour season draws to a close with the British Masters, a tournament he's hosting just a couple of weeks away. Fred, he said this is the best he has played for a couple of years in terms of ball striking and control, so he was delighted with what was his best result of the year. I do think that there were a lot of positives to take from that, and now he can really look forward to playing in and hosting the British Masters.
The Champions Tour was in Canada last week. For the Pacific Lynx Bear Mountain Open. Lee Jansen posted a final round 68, but missed a chance to secure his second Champions Tour win. He dropped three strokes late in his round on Sunday to allow Jerry Kelly to pick up the win. After making three birdies in a row, the former U.S. Open champion bogeyed the par 4 15th and made a double bogey on the par 4 17th. For Kelly, it was his second Champions Tour win in 4 weeks. Jerry Kelly said, "You always want that validation after you win the first one, and to get it so soon, I'm very surprised, but I'm just going to keep working hard." Kelly bounced back from a bogey on 13, made birdie at 15. He holed a putt after being stung by a bee, Carlos. Who said golfers aren't tough? Of course, Kelly is really a hockey player who happens to play golf, so there is that. So, Carlos, I guess that wraps up the recaps, huh? We're ready to start talking about this week.
Let's do some previews on the four call, a quick previews, and of course we're going to be talking about the Tour Championship in our practice range. So let's talk about another one that is on the finals. It's the third of the fourth final tournaments there at the Web.com Tour, and you said it is the DAP Championship. So tell us all about that.
Yeah, as I said earlier, we're making our second stop in Ohio in 3 weeks for the Web.com Tour. They're coming to Canterbury Club just outside of Cleveland. It's the third leg of the Web.com Tour Final Series. Bryson DeChambeau won here last year, but won't be on hand to defend. Canterbury is relatively short by today's standards, and the par 70 at just under 7,000 yards should favor a ball striker. It's getting late for veterans to regain their PGA Tour cards, for young guys to jump to the big from the web.com to the big tour for next season. So, Carlos, we're going to want to watch that, and it's going to be on Golf Channel next week.
I mean, you make sounding like playing twice in 3 weeks in Ohio. It's like if Ohio would be like the center of the golf universe. I don't know.
Of the golf universe. You know that. I'm teaching you. I'm training you.
And the European Tour, the Portugal Masters, is going to be played at the Dom Pedro Victoria Golf Course in Vila Moura in Portugal. That course is 7,273 yards and plays at a par 72. A €2 million purse is going to be with a price of for first place of €333,000. Paddy Harrington is the defending champion. His victory last year was his first regular European Tour victory since the 2007 Irish Open. He moved into the top 10 after his victory, fell out 2 weeks later, and hasn't been back inside the top 100 then. Thomas Peters leads three players from Europe's Ryder Cup team at Hazeltine. The others are past Portugal Masters winner Andy Sullivan and former Masters champion Danny Willett. Russell Knox is in the field, his 11th official start on the European Tour this season. He wants to play for Europe on the Ryder Cup, so he's making his starts now there on the European Tour. Walker Cup players Connor Syme, Jack Davison, Jackson Brar, and Alfie Plant are making their professional debuts. And two-time Masters champion Jose Maria Olazabal is playing for the seventh time this year on the European Tour. But he has missed his last 11 cuts, dating to a tie for ninth in the Hassan Trophy in 2015. But it's great to see Jose Maria again playing. If you want to watch this on television Thursday and Friday, you have to get up early, 6:30 to 8:30 a.m. on Golf Channel. Saturday and Sunday is going to be, Fred, 8 to 11 a.m. on the Golf Channel.
I talked about the Champions Tour earlier. They were in Canada. Now they're sliding down to Pebble Beach, down to the Monterey Peninsula, for the Pure Insurance Championship. This event also helps the first tee, and there's top junior golfers playing alongside the veterans at both iconic Pebble Beach and Poppy Hills. They play on two courses. There's 78 players vying for a piece of the $2 million purse and valuable Charles Schwab Cup points. You can watch it on Golf Channel Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. You know, Pebble Beach, first tee junior golfers, you know, what's not to like, Carlos?
Hey, it's golf. Let's watch it. And in other tours, there's going to be a lot of action on the minor tours. There's going to be the Challenge Tour, which is the equivalent of the web.com tour for the European Tour. There to the last six tournaments. Kazakhstan Open is going to be there, played at the Nortel Golf Course in Almaty, Kazakhstan. Of course, last year the winner was Sam Walker. He's not there. But there's a lot of the players moving in, like Nicolay Eiming there, trying to fortify his spot among the top 15, which are the ones that are going to earn their card for the European Tour next season. So it's going to a lot of pieces moving there. Also, the ladies European Tour, the embattled one, finally is going to have to hold off a tournament that's going to be the Andalusia Costa del Sol Women's Spanish Open, and that's going to be played at the Real Golf Course at Guadalmina, Spain. The defending champion, Azahara Munoz, will be there. There's a lot of good players that are going to be there. Susan Peterson, among others, are going to be playing there. But Azahara Munoz, really from Spain, is relishing her home challenge, Fred. And with that, we'll wrap up our previews, the four call, the quick previews for this weekend. Now, let's go for the par five news. And Fred, you're going to kick it off talking about some ruling complications issues. Are we having more ruling complications? What's going on? I thought that was already sorted out.
Yeah, no. Yeah, even the USDA and the RNA, they're not going to get this sorted out. Before I get to that, Carlos, though, I'd like to mention just a minute real quick, our magazine, NWO Golf Links, we changed our name this month, the September issue. We're now called the Ohio Golf Journal. And in addition to maintaining the same quality of articles, information, news, golf travel from our various contributing writers, we also have a new website, ohiogolfjournal.com, where people can log on, pick out their favorite article, look at it, go to the section they want to look at, golf travel, whatever, see the articles that are in there. The archive page has all the back issues of NWO Golf Links and now called Ohio Golf Journal. So if anyone's interested, ohiogolfjournal.com to view the September issue. We feature Gaylord Golf Mecca on the cover, beautiful picture of some leaves turning a golden yellow and with a green in there. That Northern Michigan this time of year playing golf, it's pretty nice stuff. But yeah, Carlos, getting back to the rules deal, we had a couple this week. We talked about Hanna Nordqvist earlier in the show about her thing at the U.S. Women's Open last year with moving a few grains of sand. We talked about Lexi, the four-shot penalty. Well, we got all kinds of stuff happening this week. First, Sergio Garcia, your guy, found himself in a spot of bother on the final hole on Sunday at the BMW Championship. Things got a little complicated. It took 20 minutes to sort it out with a rules official there while the rest of the field had to wait until it all got sorted out. Sergio's ball came to rest on the rocks on the 18th near the green. He decided his best shot was to play away from the hole and carom the ball off the rocks backwards onto the green. Kind of like you see guys play off the wall at the road hole, off that brick wall. They hit it off that and bounce it back onto the green. Well, that's what he was going to try and do. Well, in playing that shot, an awning from the grandstand came into play. And due to that, Sergio was given a free drop. He hits it in the rocks. He's got no shot, and he gets a free drop. If the stands wouldn't have been there, no free drop. Figure it out. Take a drop. Take a stroke. I'm not sure the rules makers had intended for a ball that found the rocks to receive a free drop under any circumstance. So Sergio was definitely the beneficiary of the complicated rules on that one. On the other side of the coin, not so lucky, Ben Crane was severely penalized and eventually disqualified for having non-conforming stickers on two of his clubs during the first round on Thursday. He uses the stickers, the TrackMan stickers, to get accurate readings on his distance on his TrackMan and failed to remove them from his driver and six iron prior to beginning his round. He alerted officials, and they initially ruled he was in violation of Rule 4-1 because the decal on the club face was deemed an attachment, making the club non-conforming. The penalty for such an infraction is two strokes per hole, up to a maximum of four strokes. He was awarded the max penalty for each club, a total of eight strokes, was added to his 3-under par round, so that resulted in a 5-over 76. He was next to last in the field, probably would not have made the cut anyway after Friday, but the next day, Web.com tour officials, after discussions, disqualified him from the event. The vice president of rules and competition, Jim Duncan, said in a statement that Crane had discovered TrackMan stickers on both his driver and six iron on the 11th hole. Although he removed the driver from play immediately, he didn't pull the six iron from his bag until number 14. He came back this morning, said he knew he had the six iron. He's got to make a declaration that the club is out of play, either to a member of the committee, which he could have told, or to one of his playing competitors. When he didn't make that declaration, he knew he had to take the club out of play. That's ultimately a disqualification. Yes, these stickers should not have been on his clubs during the tournament play. Did they give him an unfair advantage over the rest of the field? Should he have been DQ'd? Probably not. But why couldn't they get the ruling right in the first place? They gave him an eight-stroke penalty. Should have been well and done. Even the rules officials don't know what to do in every situation. So, Carlos, between the technology and the rules, everything's becoming so complicated. Just no amount of simplification by the USGA or by the RNA, it's just not going to solve all these rules issues anytime soon. It just seems every week we have more and more come up. It's just a severe problem. I don't have the answer. It takes someone much smarter than me. But somebody's got to figure this out, and quick. I mean, this is becoming a blemish on the game. It's just out of control.
Fred, Sergio deserved that one. He's Sergio. He's Sergio. Now, Ben.
Yeah.
Why? What's wrong with this sticker? Explain that one to me. I mean, what is a non-conforming sticker? What defines that, really?
You know, you can put those stickers on your clubs, you know, to put faces on there or different designs or whatever. I mean, those are not illegal to put on there. It doesn't make it non-conforming. Okay. Why these are on there, they're used on the range to make sure that the track man accurately picks up the swing speed as it's coming through the ball and, you know, the curvature angle as it's coming through. So I guess those are deemed as aids. And, you know, aids are not allowed on the course. You can use them on the range, you know, just like range finders. You can use them in practice rounds, but you can't use them during the tournament. So evidently these stickers were deemed to be an illegal training device, should not have been in the bag, and so they are deemed – it made the clubs non-conforming. You there? We lost you. Well, I'm going to go on. I'm going to go on. Hopefully, Carlos will come back in a minute. Let me check here, see if – no, I don't hear anything from him. Carlos, I still can't hear you. Next story that I have is about Jason Day and Colin Swanton, his caddy, who he fired this week. Jason, they've been together forever. And as you know, there have been a rash of player-caddy changes this summer. Jim McKay, Bones, and Phil broke up. Rory and JP are quits. And now Jason Day is split with his only caddy he's ever had. Being inside the ropes as a caddy can be akin to walking a tightrope with a golfer whose mental state changes with every three-putt or bogey. Day realized the pressure he and Colin have been under,
Fred,
and said, yes, Fred, so you're back.
I'm back, yes.
Yes.
Sorry,
okay.
I don't know where I know where I got lost, but I don't know what you stopped. I mean, you started going after this, but I just want to see. I mean, I know you already might have explained the.
No, sticker. You go ahead. No, just jump back in. No.
Okay. Now, just want to finish that part of the sticker. So, I mean, to me, I understand that it's a sensor for the TrackMan, but it's not helping me play better during the round. So I don't understand really well how it's going to help me. Well,
why?
It's going to help me afterwards, because if I have the TrackMan on, which I won't have it on during the play because I'm moving all around.
Right.
So I don't get it. That one, it was mind-boggling to me that for that
kind of
sticker, it's not making him play better. It's not. Correct me if I'm wrong, but does it make you play better while you're playing? No, right?
No, if anything, I mean, it's minor, you know, it's a sticker. It would increase airflow over around the club. So, you know, that's a minor thing, you know, because it's a really small thing. But I would have no idea how it could help play on the course. I don't know why it would even be a concern. Except that it's a training aid or part of a training aid, and as such, it's not allowed on the course, even though it's not helpful At the time, it's still a part of the training aid to be used on the range only or in practice only. So that's the only answer I can give you, Carlos.
Correct, correct. No, I totally agree. And the worst of all is that he is out also of this next tournament. So he was disqualified from this next tournament. He cannot play it. And that is really, I don't understand. But anyway.
He's disqualified from the next tournament?
Yeah.
From
that's
the
what
draft?
I heard. Yeah. Yeah, I'll find out where I read it, but while you're talking in the next subject, but I'll talk about mine now and then afterwards.
Okay.
I'll research
yeah,
it again.
Ahead.
But I think I read that he was not going to be able to play on the DAP because of this. But I'll get to it if it's right or wrong. I know I saw the title. I don't know if I read it wrong, so I'll get to that. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be he would just been disqualified from the boys. I don't know why he would be disqualified from the from this week as well.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, let's talk about some Florida golf updates post Hurricane Irma. As of Tuesday afternoon, 6.5 million Floridians were without electricity, and Bloomberg estimated the total damage to the Sunshine State from Hurricane Irma at $49 billion. Winds at the Naples airport as Irma passed over peaked at 142 miles an hour. That's the highest registered in the state. Naples Mayor Bill Barnett told CBS News on Tuesday that storm surge there was predicted to be anywhere between 12 and 18 feet, and they really touched that. They had minimal storm surge, so they still have a lot of water, though, and there were a couple of neighborhoods that they couldn't even get into. That was last week. So it was no surprise when the USGA announced the postponement of the U.S. Women's Mid-Amateur scheduled for next month at Quail Creek Country Club in Naples. Rachel Sadowski, who's the U.S. Women's Mid-Amateur Championship Director, said that after assessing the storm's impact on the course, they determined with Quail Creek that the championship cannot be successfully conducted on the scheduled dates next month. And their thoughts are with their good friends there at the Quail Creek and with everyone in the southeast affected by the storm. No future date was for the event was announced, so that it's still in the air. Now, most golf courses on the First Coast have tall trees and numerous water hazards. Those are facilities that were hardest hit by Hurricane Irma earlier that week, and the staffs at almost all of them were scrambling to clear the trees and debris, repair bunkers, and hope the turf dries out so they can begin moving fairways and greens and reopen. The urgency is for one key reason. In an industry that has been struggling in recent years with the loss of customers and difficulty attracting new ones, fall in North Florida is historically a lucrative time of year. Everybody that is on the winter on the north comes down and plays there. Golfers who weren't keen on playing in 90-degree temperatures and 100-degree heat indexes on grass burned by the summer sun often end their hiatus and take advantage of cooler temperatures. Among the courses sustaining the most damage were the two at the TPC Sawgrass, the Players Stadium course, and Dice Valley. Although the PGA Tour said on Thursday that it was still assessing the situation, it did report that 18 inches of rain fell on the property between late last week and Monday, with 200 trees lost on the stadium course and 100 at the valley. Fred, TPC Sawgrass took it to Twitter expressing that as well, and they will be providing updates on their assessment as they become available through their website. And I really hope, have hope on their word that they are optimistic there will be no major impact for the Players' Championship next year. But definitely, I mean, 200 trees on the stadium course and the Players' Championship is going to look a little different next year.
Yeah, but knowing TBC, they'll just go out and plant some new ones. They'll just buy live, you know, grow ones and put them in there. They got a lot of money there. So, as I started talking about Jason Day and his caddy Colin Swanton, add to the list of player caddy relationships that have split up this year. And the reason that Jason came to this decision. He realized the pressure that he and Colin have been under. And so Jason said, I never wanted to turn into a toxic relationship where he's taking me from where I am as a 12-year-old kid to where I'm today, and I'm not talking to him anymore. I was worried if I kept it going, it was going to head that way. And I love him too much to have him not in my life because of how special he is. Colin Swatton will remain Dave's swing coach. He has been much more than Dave's instructor and caddy. Swatton was Dave's surrogate father since an aimless 12-year-old Jason Day began at the Kurlbin International School in Queensland, Australia, where Swatton was an instructor. Day revealed that he has been thinking about relieving Swatton as his caddy since 2012. But after going winless this year and falling to number 9 in the world, the 29-year-old Aussie felt that he could wait no longer, and he made the switch last week. He has brought in a friend from home, Luke Reardon, who is with his roommate at the Hills International College in Australia. Obviously, this is a very hard time for both of us, said Jason. It's hard because we've been a team for so long. Like I said, he was an amazing caddy, amazing coach, amazing person. He's done pretty much everything he can to get me where I'm going. He's a father figure for me ever since I was a kid, and I wanted to make sure that it's still there. So, you know, it's really tough being a caddy to a PGA Tour pro when you're inside the ropes. And, you know, Jason wanted to maintain his relationship with Colin away from the golf course. And so that's the reason for this split, and I applaud him for that. Some things are a little bit more important than others. So, but also, Jason made news last week when he aced the par 3 17th hole during the BMW Championship. In addition to momentarily taking a three-stroke lead in the tournament, he won $100,000 in a scholarship for an Evan Scholar caddy. Plus, he won a new $155,000 BMW 760i. Well, after talking with his manager, Day also donated the car to the Evan Scholar Foundation. So a second deserving caddy will receive a scholarship as well. And, Carlos, I kind of know what they pay for these things, and they may even that kind of money, depending on what they get for turning the car back in, it could fund two or three scholarships. So I don't know what they're going to end up with that. But Day said, I am in a fortunate position in being able to not only impact one person but to impact another. For them to be able to go to college as well is huge. Evan Scholars is one of the major beneficiaries of the BMW Championship every year, and to end up with two new scholarships is huge for them. There are nearly 1,000 Evan Scholars currently attending colleges across the country. A caddy must be an excellent student, have financial need, and be recommended by his or her home club to become eligible to receive an Evan Scholarship. And, Carlos, if you've got a youngster at home and they're looking for a good summer job, I think they start when they're 14 or 15, find a club in your area that supports the Evan Scholar Program. Get your child enrolled in the caddy program. Get them out there carrying bags, meeting people. It's a great education. It's a great way to earn a few bucks in the summer for a kid. And the Evan Scholarship, they could get a free college education out of it.
That's a great, definitely a great program, and it should be supported everywhere. Hey, some news regarding golf in Asia. Last Friday, reports that North Korea fired a missile over Japan led to a bizarre and unprecedented situation at the ANA Open Golf Tournament in the northern city of Sapporo. Victorian golfer Matt Griffin was preparing for his second round when news broke that North Korea fired a missile east from the Sunan district in Pyongyang. With Japan reportedly warning residents to take shelter, tournament organizers wasted no time taking action. Matt Griffin, which is the Victorian golfer, he took it to Twitter and then told SEN there, "We woke this morning to an alert that said there was North Korea had launched a ballistic missile and another that said it had landed in the Pacific Ocean. This is They've suspended play out at the course for a while, and we'll just wait and see what they decide to do, end of quote. Griffin was one under par after the round, and he was not the only Australian competing there in Sapporo, with Adam Townsend, Adam Bland, Kurt Barnes, David Branson, Brendan Jones, and Brad Kennedy also in the tournament. While Griffin believes that the immediate threat future moving forward was low, he was aware of the potential need to interrupt his professional life at the drop of a hat. He jumped on the phone to SEN Radio despite massive concern from his family and friends, this especially because his wife works for a Korean business. We can only hope that nothing will ever happen with North Korea, but you never know, and that's a difficult area and position to be in. Hopefully everyone will be all right there moving forward, and all the tournaments can resume as usual. On other Asian Golf news, the LPGA Tour has canceled its event next month in China because of permitting problems. The Ali Sports LPGA was set for October 5th through the 8th in Shanghai, and LPGA Tour Commissioner Michael Wan said Tuesday that unfortunately they received word that the tournament was unsuccessful in obtaining approval from the local district government. And the hardest part about this news was that they have a title sponsor, a tournament operator, a TV production group, and a host venue all set to go. IK Kim won that event last year, and in 2015, the Ringwood Pine Valley LPGA Classic in Beijing, as you might remember, was called off 10 weeks before it was scheduled to be played. Fred, while we always have talked constantly about the incredible potential that the Asian market has, all these kinds of challenges is what is really keeping it from really reaching that full potential.
Yeah, the Pacific Rim with North Korea acting up is just becoming a real problem. I don't know what they're going to do with that guy. He is just completely out of control. The guy is just an idiot. And then China, they can't seem to get their act together. Do they want golf? Do they not want golf? What are they going to do? You know, what's the situation? I mean, it's not like you didn't know this thing was coming. It's planned every year. So, you know, it just seems like it's one step forward, two steps back over there. So maybe there's a reason we're playing golf in the United States and Europe, because, you know, we can get stuff done here, I guess. Our last story in the Par 5 news tonight, Carlos, is kind of unique. I don't know if we've ever had anything quite like this. Two men wanted to get into the Guinness Book of Records for playing the longest hole in golf, and they chose Mongolia to do it in. Why Mongolia? There's only one golf course in the whole country. But it's an enormous country with few people, no fences, and the largest fairways in the world. The two men decided to finish their golfing odyssey on the only 18th green in Mongolia, which lies on the eastern side of the country. Thus, they would tee off on the western side and play across the width, which is approximately 2,000 kilometers or 1,250 miles. So, Carlos, roughly from my home here in Toledo to Denver, Colorado, or Toledo to Naples, Florida, is about 1,250 miles. That's a long, long ways to be hitting a golf ball. Can you imagine trying to walk out? I can't imagine trying to walk out of my house and start hitting a golf ball down the street from here to Denver. That would be, go out along I-80 and start hitting a golf ball. Yeah, that'd be great. They estimated the par to be about 14,000. That's a lot of golf swings. And, you know, my question is, does Club Car make an electric golf cart that's good for 1,200 miles? I don't think so. They gained pledges of support to raise money for Alorius, which runs children's sports charities worldwide. And so they set out on their golfing journey at the base of Khuiten Peak, the highest peak in Mongolia, its westernmost point. The pair had dozens of people telling them they were mad or crazy or both, with comments ranging from "that's impossible" to "do you not have anything better to do?" The one guy who hails from Northern Ireland said, "The first week was the hardest of my life. to get to the first tee, we had to take a Russian Jeep through a national park for 5 hours. From there, it was ridiculous. They had to use a camel and horses for a four-hour ride up the side of the mountain to hit the first tee shot, and neither had ever ridden a horse before. They ended their improbable quest on Saturday, last Saturday, after 80 days and 20,000 shots, covering 2,000 kilometers, playing through swamps on frozen rivers and across deserts. There were perils and hardships, but the task was completed. When asked if he will give up golf for a while, Ralston answered, "I definitely want to keep playing when I get back. I've been super pumped about playing golf every day. I might hit fewer balls when I get back, but I will still be addicted to the game as much as I ever have been." Carlos, we got to give a doff of the old golf cap to these two blokes for a job well done. Money was raised for charity. Golf was played in one of the most desolate places on earth, and two men enjoyed a round of golf. What could be better?
Definitely. And with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 news. Now, let's take it to the practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each of us take our own shots at it. And this week, what better to do than previewing the Tour Championship, the last and final tournament of the regular season on the PGA Tour, the one for the $10 million prize. And, you know, the FedEx Cup culminates this week at the Tour Championship at East Lake in Georgia. It began life as the Nabisco Championship back in 1987 when Tom Watson was the winner. It became the Tour Championship in 1991 and has since been won by some greats of the game, including Paul Azinger, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Vijay Singh, Henrik Stenson, and Jordan Spieth. Last year, Rory McIlroy fired a 64 in the final round. They came through a four-hole playoff against Ryan Moore and Kevin Chappell. East Lake Golf Club is one of the oldest in the U.S. and was the home club of legendary amateur Bobby Jones. The course has hosted the Tour Championship on 14 previous occasions. Was the venue for the 1963 Ryder Cup. In 2008, the course at East Lake was closed for a few months with a view towards recreating the layout's original firm and fast playing characteristics. The overhaul was a rousing success. It's a challenging track, although low scoring is not uncommon. The winning score has been around the 10-under par mark since the changes were made. Last year, the winning total was 12-under. When it comes to East Lake, the course, I mean, it puts accuracy at a premium. The rough is brutal, and the fairways are some of the most difficult to hit on tour, so guys who can keep it in play will be at the top of any list target to win the tournament. The greens at East Lake are some of the most undulating that we'll see all year, and it reminds me a lot of Augusta. You would think that this would lead to great putters having success here, and to an extent they do, but however, you will see instead guys who excel under approach shots. Similar to Augusta, you want to be at a closer proximity to the hole to take stress off your putter. Unlike what we have seen in the past weeks, East Lake is not a birdie fest type of course, and players will be forced to grind out pars and be more selective with the holes that they can realistically score at. This puts bogey avoidance into play as another key stat that we should consider when seeing who could win here. The key holes, the two that I'm going to be watching all the time and that you should do, is the two closing at each nine. The ninth, a 235-yard par 3, with deep bunkers left and right of a two-tiered green. When the wind's against, many will need a fairway wood to get up here. A par is a tough ask. And the 18th is a lengthy par 5 that can be stretched to 600 yards. This finishing hole will offer the power hitters the chance of reaching in two, but it's a testing second, though, with bunkers guarding the front part of the green, so they have to be selective. Fred, East Lake is a classic venue, associated already with the Tour Fed Championship and liked by all players. What you think about the idea of moving the tournament away from here? Would it be every other year or just make it as part of a rotation? What's your take on that?
You know, I've never been a big fan of East Lake in Atlanta. I know it's a wonderful story of revival in a depressed area, and it's, you know, the home of Bobby Jones. You know, that's all good stuff. But why does it need to be held in Atlanta every year? As one of the tour's biggest events, would you think they'd want to move it around to some different markets or some bigger cities? You know, Ron Green Jr. made a good argument in this week's Global Golf Post. You know, take it out to the West Coast every other year. Or how about Detroit, which doesn't currently have a stop. They're going to go to Flint here starting next year, go back up there. But what about Philadelphia? They don't have anything. That's a great market in Philadelphia. I don't know. Would you ever consider making the changing the format for the Tour Championship? You're down to 30 guys. Why don't you make it 32, then make it a round-robin match play for the week? Now, that would be a true playoff. Have a match play format for that last event. I think that would add some excitement, add something to it. So, you know, I'd like to see them use their imagination a little bit and move the tournament around. I don't think it needs to be Atlanta. I don't think it needs to be at East Lake every year. Move it around a little bit, and let's see what happens. Maybe even change it to a match play. What do you think about that, Carlos?
Well, you know, that sounds like a very good idea. I mean, after all, it's the FedEx Cup, and you want to have a playoff. That's what you are talking about, playoff. So definitely, no, I would do it. I don't know if I would go as much as taking it out from East Lake. I don't consider it a major where I would put a rota in. I would give a thought about the maybe the every other year, but I mean, I'm also already used to seeing East Lake being the one, and it's a challenging course, fitting to be a challenge for this ending. But I would go for the change on the format, definitely. And let me tell you one thing about the players that are in some of the mathematical chances on what it will take to win the Cup. Defending Tour Champion FedEx Cup holder Rory McIlroy, like you mentioned, didn't make it into East Lake Field this year, and so he will not retain the title. Jordan Spieth leads the rankings, but any of the players in the top five on the standings will claim the Cup if they win at East Lake. The five men who will win the FedEx Cup and the $10 million bonus that goes along with it, with the victory in the Tour Championship, are Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Mark Leishman, and John Rahm. In theory, all 30 players in the field at East Lake have a chance to win the FedEx Cup, but let's take for 30th-ranked Jason Duffner to take the top prize. The leading players would have to suffer a terrible week. Let's take him for
break a lane.
Duffner must win the Tour Championship, and all of the following have to happen. Number one, Jordan Spieth must finish 29th or worse. Number two, Justin Thomas must finish in a three-way tie for sixth or worse. Number three, Dustin Johnson must finish T4 or worse. Mark Leishman must finish 3-3 or worse. John Rahm, number five, must finish in a three-way tie for second or worse. And Ricky Fowler, number six, must finish T2 or worse. I mean, you get my drift. From there, you go all the way up to the first. There are all sorts of possible scenarios, though, and everyone in the field has a lot to play for. And it would take a whole show to explain all the different possibilities for each player to win the Cup. But the basic thing to remember is that for anyone ranked sixth or lower, they must win the tournament and hope that all the planets in the universe need to be aligned to do so in their favor. Only the top five can win outright by winning the tournament, but they all have reasonable chance to win it even if they don't win the tournament, but need other players of the top five to falter a bid and, of course, not win the tournament. The other players ranging from 6 to 30 that are going to be playing are Ricky Fowler, Hideki Matsuyama, Justin Rose, Brooks Koepka, Paul Casey, Pat Perez, Matt Kuchar, Charlie Hoffman, Daniel Berger, Jason Day, Webb Simpson, Jonathan Vegas, Kevin Kisner, Kevin Chappell, Brian Harman, Adam Hadwin, Kyle Stanley, Patrick Reed, Tony Finau, Sergio Garcia, Xander Schauffele, Russell Henley, Gary Woodland, Patrick Cantlay, and Jason Duffner, Fred.
Yeah, you know, when I look down the list, I see probably of the 30 guys, I see about 8 guys that can win the event. And then it comes down for me to Spieth, Thomas, or Johnson to win the FedEx Cup. Now, if one of those guys, which Jordan Spieth has been playing the most consistent, so I see him in the top five, and if he's in the top five, I say he probably wins it unless Thomas or Johnson happen to win the tournament. So, or even Leishman or Rahm, for that matter, they would probably win it. But you know, John Rahm's had a hell of a year. I mean, wouldn't that be something if he would close this out and capture that? And then I, you know, every week it seems like I'm still on the Ricky Fowler bandwagon. I, you know, Ricky could do well here, and he could win, and you know, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility if Ricky would win the tournament. Jordan would just have to finish T2 or less, Ricky could win them both, the tournament and the 10 mil. So that would be something for him. But anyway, I don't know. You know, Carlos, we still got after, you know, besides winning the tournament or getting the $10 million FedEx Cup, you know, we still got this Player of the Year discussion out there, and it's going to have to get wrapped up. So, you know, he's got – let me just say it this way. Justin Thomas is going to be Player of the Year unless Jordan Spieth or Dustin Johnson happen to win the tournament and the FedEx Cup. I just don't see any other way around it. You know, Thomas has the 5 wins, which include a major, and if he would get it, then the FedEx Cup playoffs. So, you know, I think he's kind of a lock, but we'll see. So, the bottom line here is it's very complicated. Once you get past the top five, who could win the FedEx Cup? It all falls back to the top five. Really, it's kind of in their ballpark. They kind of have to give it away, so which is kind of fun. It puts the pressure on them and lets everybody else take a shot at them. And down to Player of the Year, I think it's Justin Thomas's to lose, Carlos.
Well, I would say that it's going to be between him and Jordan Spieth, definitely, because those are the two that won majors this year. And any one of them who really finished best here for now, I would say Jordan Spieth is playing extremely well during this final series. And I don't see him finishing outside of the top five here. And he has a reasonable chance of winning with a top five finish. So he seems like he could win the FedEx Cup. But if he wins it outright, to me, it's between him and Justin Thomas. I mean, they're both. I see Dustin Johnson with an outside chance of becoming a Player of the Year. I don't really see it that much because he didn't win a major. So even if he wins the FedEx Cup, then you go with this old comment and argument, what is going to be more? I mean, whether you won the FedEx Cup or you won a major.
Yeah.
So it's that discussion that we always have this every year. So I always try to stick with the major winners. And this time, both of them are playing incredibly well and are 1 and 2 right now on the FedEx Cup, and that's Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas to be Players of the Year. Now, the Rookie of the Year is already decided. That's like from the beginning of the year, that was John Rahm. If he wins, he's been playing incredibly well lately. He's on a tear lately, and he could win it outright by winning here. Like you said, it would be a magical finish for him, not only to win the Rookie of the Year, but win here the FedEx Cup and the $10 million. He's one that I've always said that once he figures out how to control his attitude, he just has to calm down a bit. Once he does that, he's going to be out there challenging every weekend, challenging Jordan and Justin and Dustin Johnson for the top players in the world. Ricky Fowler, I see him playing well this week there at East Lake. I think East Lake fits his his style of play. So I could definitely see him winning the tournament and winning the cup as well. So I would go with that. My guy, Hideki Matsuyama, he hasn't been playing well. The only positive that I see on him is that he played maybe the best final round this past weekend. So maybe that will pump him up and try to get him here going. But I think that ever since he revealed that he had a daughter, I mean, he's been like going down all the way. So maybe he can come back. I don't know. But he's like, yeah, it's suited more for players with a great approach game. And I think he can be there. But outside of those players, I see a lot of chance for Justin Rose and Paul Casey, who I pick as one of the dark horses at the beginning of the – before in our show, previous show, for the FedEx Cup, that I think he was going to do well. Outside of that, I don't see anybody else really taking this. Now, there's one guy that I want to mention here that I picked him to be one of the dark horses in the PGA Championship, but that was Xander Schauffele. Look for that guy. This young guy is good. You're going to keep seeing him more and more. He made it here to the top 30. He's 26. I don't think he'll win. I mean, but, hey, he's playing great. This is one of those young players that I'm watching a lot on. So, Fred, any final comments before we move on to our final putts?
Yeah, the FedEx Cup playoffs just don't seem to be making the kind of statement the PGA Tour expected when Commissioner Tim Finchem created them. Yes, they pay a lot of money to the players, but where's the excitement? You know, I'm not on pins and needles waiting for the weekend to see if Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Leishman, or John Rahm are going to win $10 million. I'll be watching, but countless other casual golf fans will be watching the NFL. So, Carlos, it just doesn't seem to be getting it done, do you think?
No, I totally agree. I mean, it's like if you tell me if I have to watch my Niners play, which thankfully they'll play on Thursday, so I'll be able to watch something. But if there's a good game on Sunday, I'll be watching it before watching this. So I'll just have it here on my iPad.
Like, you can't say that. So.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. I have said it. Well, once the football season starts, finish all the golf. Forget about it.
We'll drum you out of the Golfaholics of America Club.
I have it on my iPad there, watching the leaderboard. Oh, okay. Then I will.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's it then.
Might not be watching. There's a good game, so we'll see. But anyway, that wraps up our practice range. You got our take on the tour championship and who should win or who will be challenging there. Hope you got all the information you needed to understand better that final. So now let's go to our final pots. Let me start talking about the 17-year-old Indian amateur Rahan Thomas, who reeled off 9 straight birdies at the Dubai Creek Golf and Yacht Club during the second round. 9.
How many?
9. Yes.
Whoa.
There during the second round of the Dubai Creek Open on the Middle East and North Africa, which is the MENA Tour. Birdies from the 2nd to the 10th propelled Thomas to a course-tying record of 10 under par 61 in his title defense, having won last year's Dubai Creek Open as an amateur. Thomas was playing along with 2011 Open champion Darren Clark, who is also a patron of the little-known MENA Tour. Thomas Rahan matched the mark set by American Mark Calcavecchia at the 2009 Canadian Open, Austrian Bernd Wiesberger at this year's Maybank Championship, South Korean Amy Yang at the Hana Bank Championship in 2015, and Beth Daniel at the 1999 LPGA Tour event. The MENA Tour might be little known, but Rahan is making a name on it and outside of it now, so this is a name to keep following in the future. We'll see what goes there. Also, here, the executive board the executive board of the International Olympic Committee officially announced that Paris will host the 2024 Summer Games and Los Angeles will get the 2028 Olympics. The two cities which were considered the leading bids to host the 24 Games had already agreed to alternate as host, and the executive board, which was meeting last week in Lima, Peru, approved the lineup. In June, the executive board recommended golf as well as 27 other sports to remain in the Olympics for the 24 games following golf's return to the Olympics for the first time in over 100 years last year in Rio. Golf was originally approved as an Olympic sport for the 16 and 20 games when the games will be held in Tokyo. That recommendation is expected to be ratified in Peru. Fred, the golf venue for the 24 games will be Le Golf National, which is the venue for next year's Ryder Cup. And if golf is approved for the 28 games in Los Angeles, which could happen this week, then it would be Riviera Country Club, which is the annual site of the PGA Tour Genesis Open that will host the Olympics.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. in my few things here, we got some more bad news for Tiger Woods. His national tournament, which was hosted by the Woods Foundation, ended a contract with Congressional Country Club. Congressional Club members were notified by the PGA Tour. The Tiger Woods Foundation currently has no title sponsor for the PGA Tour golf tournament. Because of that circumstance, the PGA Tour has exercised its right to terminate our facilities agreement with them for 2018 and 2020 while they seek a title sponsor for the national. Hate to see the tour lose an event, and the Woods Foundation certainly does great work, but the fact of the matter is the tour was going to have to cut out some events if they want to officially end the season with a tour championship before Labor Day anyhow, so that's kind of convenient for that. We'll maybe talk about this more later, but the PGA Tour announced a new integrity program beginning next year. It's going to implement this thing beginning January 1. To protect its competitions from potential outside influences related to gambling. While the program's stated mission is to maintain integrity and prevent and mitigate betting-related corruption in PGA Tour competitions. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that. Justin Thomas, like most Floridians, made hurricane preparations on his week off last week. Good thing he had some good friends. He took his Wanamaker and other valuables to Ricky Fowler's house because Ricky has a cool underground safe to protect them. Nice to have friends, Carlos. Jordan Spieth announced his retirement in Chicago last week, his retirement from baseball. He's going to hang up his baseball spikes after having thrown out the first pitch at Wrigley for a Cubs game. He announced that after throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley and Fenway, and for a Texas Ranger game in Arlington, he's hit the trifecta, so he's done with baseball, Carlos. That's all I've got. That wraps up our show for September 19th, 2017.
You heard it there, Back Niners. That wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Steve Eubanks. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, remember, Roku TV, watch there. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. And hey, don't do what I said. Just watch the FedEx Cup. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
I'm going to smack down my competition.
I'm ready to take a big bite out of competition.
It's Big Chef, Little Chef Showdown, plus hot dog, pound cake, and my barbecue Sammy. Next, Rachel.
Rachel Ray, Today at 1 on NBC5.
We all rise for work, family, passion. NBC5 rises for you, the largest news team connecting you with Texas. NBC5 Today, weekday mornings, starting at 4:30.
I'm going to smack down my competition.
I'm ready to take a big bite out of competition.
It's Big Chef, Little Chef Showdown, plus hot dog, pound cake, and my barbecue Sammy. Next, Rachel.
Rachel Ray, Today at 1 on NBC5.
We all rise for work, family, passion. NBC5 rises for you, the largest news team connecting you with Texas. NBC5 Today, weekday mornings, starting at 4:30.